Alabama on FM Talk 106.5. Turning up your voice. FM Talk 106.5. WAVH FM. Daphne, Orange Beach, Mobile. From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three begins right now. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with me, hit me up on that text line, and we'll get to your text here shortly. Let's see here. Kind of interesting development, and I spent a little time on this, I guess yesterday. It was a housing bill. We talked about rent controls and, you know, whatever you think of the housing bill is, but it passed overwhelmingly in both chambers, the House and the Senate. It split the Senate here in Alabama. Tuberville was a no vote. He was among five Republicans. I believe we voted along Rand Paul, Mike Lee, who else did he vote with? But anyway, there were a number of Republicans who voted against this so-called housing bill. Rick Scott was another one. And Katie Britt voted for it. And they both had, like, differentiating reasons and for whatever it was. And it gets through the House and the Senate. A rare stroke of bipartisanship where we're all patting each other on the back. We found common ground. And Donald Trump here in the last half hour or so says he won't be signing it. Why? The Save America Act. He's holding it hostage for the Save America Act. They had a big signing ceremony planned. Everybody got their wore their best clothes. They were going to go down to the Oval Office and Trump was going to sign this bill, and it was going to be a great show for the midterms. And then he said, nope, he's not going to sign it. The Save America bill. They won't call it the Save America bill in the mainstream media. They just call it the Save Act, or the Save America Act, I should say. They just call it the Save Act. Essentially, it's just you need to be a citizen with ID to vote. So he's trying to force their hand. I don't know that this will work. It may keep this bill from being enacted because they're not going to have enough votes to override to override a presidential veto. But just so we'll see how bad this bipartisanship, how strong it is. So that just happened. Obviously, the big story right now last night. I think the New York City elections, I'm fascinated by this. This is democracy, guys. This is what people want. And you don't have Democrat Party bosses really able to manipulate outcomes. I'm all for this. I do have confidence in people. I know there's a lot of you who are thinking, well, we're headed towards socialism and Americans will just vote themselves more government freebies or whatever. Maybe that's true for some parts of the country. I think for a lot of people, it's like, no. Well, let's put it on the ballot. Let's decide what direction we're going to go in. And Democrats have avoided that. They've talked about it. They've talked about these ideas, but they have never had real candidates who want to do this. You've had some, like, deep state apologists like Elizabeth Warren, Abigail Spanberger, just government, like, know-it-alls. And then you had the true believers, like a Bernie Sanders, who's never really gotten a fair shake. He's wrong about everything. And, yes, he has made millions of dollars off of his socialist philosophies and has three homes, but fine. But he believes in a system. He talks about it. He runs on it. And it's not a system that could ever get enacted in America under the current Democratic leadership. I think it loses. I don't think Democrats can message this, what happened in New York City, in a way that would really resonate with the entire country. You live in a big city, you're used to your communal lifestyle, but that's not for everybody. That's not for most Americans, or that's not for a lot of Americans. And they're going to reject it. But let's have that discussion at least. Let's get it out there. Because it will prevail. There's a majority of Democrats who are all for it, but not a majority of Americans. And that's the dirty little secret. Because you can't have a party, a major political party, hijacked by a minority viewpoint. And Democrats are aware of this. They've stifled this. They've held it back for a long time. Does this mean, if you want to talk about breaking up the two-party system, maybe that's where it begins. It doesn't start with Republicans. We fight amongst ourselves, but and there's, you know, ideologies and political movements come and go in this country. But Democrats have been very successful at micromanaging their side. And it looks like the dam is starting to burst, and they're going to have to go through this. How strong will it be? I don't know. Maybe in some places in America it's stronger than others. But how's the media going to react? I mean, you know, you have like old-time Democrat hacks like James Carville who are just going to be so dismissive of all of this. These old Clinton people, the old guard is not going to go along with this system, but they're going to have to play defense. They should have to play defense. And they need to talk about this. The public has given the Democratic Party a pass for too long because it's just been about Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. Donald Trump bad. That's a single unifying principle. It's going to work in 2026, but I don't think it's going to. He'll probably work in 2028 some as well. Let's go through some text here. Jeff, I put $120 of diesel in my truck. Not good. Well, I hope soon you're going to get some relief. Mike, Parker doesn't have the TDS as Whiny Quinn or the Tuberville derangement as the Nappy Boys. I'm not saying he isn't crazy, but I, too, appreciate hearing his viewpoint sometimes. Well, I expected our conversation to go much different, and it ended up being a conversation about healthcare. It's just like, I think what I like about Parker is we will acknowledge what the problem is, but we have two very different ways of tackling the problem. Like, we can agree on that's the common ground, like acknowledging what's wrong and not be told everything is okay. And there's a sort of, like, reality about the conditions on the ground, the world we live in. But how do you fix it? But we can't even get agreement on what the problems are. We're for whatever reason, Democrats are obsessed with the reflecting pool. See, unnamed texter sends me a Facebook link and asks me if I'm going to be in attendance. Guess I should open this. Because I'm eager to see what it is. Alabama Republican Party summer dinner, July 31st. No, I will not be there. I'm taking some time away that time, so I won't be there. It will be special guests, including Tuberville, Bruce Pearl, Katie Britt, Tim Burkett, Brandon Gill, Brill and Hollyhead, and Travis Johnson at the Renaissance. I forget where I'm going to be that day. maybe Minnesota or Illinois. So I do this every year. It's the end of summer camp and the beginning of school. There's a couple of weeks there where my oldest child is out. Like, he doesn't really have, and getting sitters and all of that is tough. So what I've been doing, I've been just taking vacation time, and we do a little road trip. In 24, we did a road trip. We did the entirety of the Blue Ridge Parkway at Skyline Drive, hung out Washington, D.C., went to a Braves game, went to a Nationals game, went to a NASCAR race in Richmond, and then came back. And then last summer, 25, we did some baseball parks, which ended up being very popular. We went to the Rangers Stadium in Arlington, Texas. The Royals in Kansas City, Missouri, saw the Cardinals, then the Reds, and we went to Bristol, Tennessee and saw a baseball game, played at the Speedway, hung out in the Smoky Mountain National Park a little, and then proceeded, went to Gatlinburg in Knoxville one day, and went to the minor league baseball game there. They went and saw the grandparents in Nashville. Went to a game there and then made it back in time, had a couple of days off, and then school started. So this year, a little more aggressive, but this will be the last year. We'll take his little brother. He's 2 years old now, probably in the future going forward. But it was just him and I. We're going to do an upper Midwest sort of thing. And the hope is, so I won't be at this, but this is me using this platform to talk about my vacation plans. But I want to get to, we're going to get to Minnesota. We're going to drive up. We're going to go up through St. Louis, spend a day there again, then go to a Twins game, go to a Brewers game in Wisconsin, going to go to Chicago, go back down, I think hit Cleveland, Pittsburgh, maybe Cooperstown, Niagara Falls, Toronto, then Detroit, and then try to make it back to Chicago for the Yankees and the Cubs, and then hit the Blueville Bat Factory, Nashville, and then back home. So that's over the course of 2 weeks. So no, I won't be making the summer dinner this year, unfortunately. But we'll have somebody there who will be there. For 1819 News, for sure. Let's see. Do we have more text? Fire Dog Vance and Rubio are super Hitler with extra sugar on top. Only they will take blacks' voting rights away and put them back in chains, but they're going to commit genocide. That's the only way Democrats have open borders, loser, higher inflation, loser, pro-crime loser. Tim. Jeff, what's up with this Travis Johnson dude? Is he trying to run for politics? He is just a preacher. That's it. He's very active in politics, and he's also, I believe, on the White House Faith Council. I don't think he's going to run. I've never gotten that sense from him, but he's very, very outspoken about some of these conservative issues. John, I'm glad you're going on a road trip with your eldest again. I enjoyed that article about the baseball stadium tour. We talk about it again when you get back, or is there a place to read what you write about? What you got to do if you follow me on Facebook. So I kind of document it day by day as we go along. And then I'll do something with it, I'm sure, writing about it. The seeing the country through the eyes of a five-year-old is sometimes a new perspective that I've never really thought about. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Send it on down the line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Wednesday morning. Programming note tomorrow on the show, a political consultant, John Gray. Have him on every now and then. But we're going to talk about some of the Tuberville residency stuff and the ballot challenges. I give him the floor tomorrow and at least explain the Tuberville point of view on it. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. And then April Murray Fogle, our Thursday regular, and another guest to be named later. Dirt Digger, well, thanks for the reply. We'll find you on Facebook to get the scoop. And when you get back, Dirt Digger. So we post as we go, by the way, on that. So like the first day, and I got this thing. I get a Rand McNally Road Atlas. Can use a highlighter to highlight the route we went that day and some pictures from the trip. Dirt Digger, Jeff, I forgot to tell you, have a great Father's Day. Tell you have a Father's Day. I love to hear what you do for your children and your wife. You are a great family. Well, you're very kind to say that. Fire Dog, in my travels, I've been to all the states except for Houston, Yankees, Boston, Seattle. I even went to the Expos way back when. I've been to three of the four that you haven't been to. But I haven't been to, the only West Coast one I ever got to was Oakland. We got to do a West Coast trip. That would probably require a flight to like Phoenix. Then you drive to Vegas, San Diego, and then hit to Los Angeles. And then I think just go to San Francisco. And then someday, kind of like we had to do with Colorado, we'll just have to fly to Seattle and knock that one out. I just can't. That's San Francisco to Seattle, such a long drive. Squirrelverine, a quote from a 2018 AL.com article about Mobile's gay Mardi Gras groups, an example of the liberal hypocrisy when it comes to their inclusion. The guy, probably a member of Osiris, specifically said he was also a member of another historical Mardi Gras crew that did not allow black people in it or at its balls, and no one followed through on that remark or condemning him for still being a member of a racially discriminating group. Quote, I think the openness of Osiris is extremely important, and it says a lot about other groups that are not so welcoming, said Bailey. I'm in another organization and my black friends don't get into, and it's very discouraging. It shouldn't be that way. The Osiris Ball is the one night a year that all my friends get together. That from a 2018 AL.com article. And it wasn't about the, I guess your point, Squirrelverine, was it's not about the racial animus. But instead, was just about this, the inclusion being the gender preference or sexuality preference or whatever. And it's a yes, a very strange thing. It's an obsession, and I don't think it's a healthy obsession. And I get back to what we were talking about this yesterday. It just seems like it's being forced upon us just because we can. And we're going to do this. It's for your own good. Even if you don't want it, we don't care. We're an inclusive city and you're going to like it. Well, is that what we voted for? Is that what we agreed upon going forward? I don't remember those discussions. Well, you just do it because it's good for you. You do it. I don't care what your religion tells you. I don't care about any of that. We're going to showcase this lifestyle as part of our city. And it's like, I get like a text with the iTexter. I'm sure, well, you need to stay out of people's bedrooms. Well, no one's going into people's bedrooms and tell them what they can and can't do. What we don't want is the city taking a side on it. The city government making a statement, condoning something that a lot of people disagree with. There's no reason to even dabble in that arena. Just stay out of it. Why do you need to showcase this? Why is this something that the city needs to do? Well, it's good for tourism, is it? Or is it just making somebody feel good about themselves because they are promoting whatever they think is virtuous? Is that what the intended purpose of Visit Mobile that's behind a lot of this? Is that the stated purpose? Is it virtue signaling or is it tourism? And they're leaning way to it to the virtue signaling lane on this. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. You need to get in touch with the show. You text me, time permitting. I'll try to get to your text, and we'll respond accordingly. Joining us now on the line, I guess I've been meaning to get on for quite some time. He's an advisor for the Free Enterprise Initiative and a research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. But also, you can read his work on 1819 News, 1819news.com. But Alan Mendenhall joins us on the line. Alan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Thank you for making time. Thanks for hopping on this morning. And I want to get you on. One thing that caught my attention, it's a couple of weeks old here. You had a column, and so AOC came to Alabama to enlighten us. Yes, and it went as expected. And she's a national political celebrity or whatever you want to call her. But it's this thing they always do. And I think Howard Dean did this. But over the years, these high profile Democrats come to Alabama and they talk about exporting their belief system, their values to Alabama, and that's going to make it better. And that is so misguided. It's so naive. And you write about it.
Yeah, it's very misguided and very naive. But if you're a writer for AL.com and you bash the South, well, somebody up north is going to throw a Pulitzer Prize at you. But AOC came down and she was like, New York must pull up the southern states like Alabama, pull them up to where we are, like we're backwards and redneck hicks who have the economics all wrong. But if you just look at the data, red states, including Alabama, are booming. I mean, domestic migration is up to red states. Places like Texas and North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Tennessee are booming. And states, blue states like California, New York, Illinois, New Jersey, Massachusetts are dying. They're starting to stagnate. And so it's really cool what we're doing. We've got, you know, better taxes. We've got more GDP growth in these red states. We've got SEC schools that are booming, bursting at the seams. We've got, you know, high enrollments, whereas all the state schools in some of those states I just mentioned are kind of floundering. So all the momentum is towards the red states, and it's really exciting because we've got better economic policies. Now, I will say Alabama is still a little bit behind a lot of our red state neighbors, but we're definitely on the up and up when you compare us to blue states.
Well, that is just my fear here, though, is like there's people in Republican Party politics. They look at these places. They look at New York City. Maybe we could do a little more to be like them. And you start seeing that kind of mission creep into our state policy sometimes. And then, you know, the politics come with it. But like I lived in Washington, D.C. for 8 years. And it wasn't so much Washington, D.C. itself. That's a basket case. But it was the people there. And they were all like maybe not quite as blatant and as derogatory as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. But they really had a very bad view, a very poor view, an ill-informed view of the South. And then they thought, you know, just sort of this elitist pseudo-intellectualism. And that we just do things right and you just need to do it our way. But I think part of the misguidedness to it is the world doesn't work the way you think it does. Like you're two classrooms. We're not in a laboratory setting. The world's a chaotic place. And you can't export a set of values, a set of systems into another place and just expect it to work.
Well, that's true. And also the values and systems that they advocate are bad. I mean, what's so ironic, and I point this out in the piece, is that the economics that people like AOC and Bernie Sanders promote actually have a lot more to do with sort of the progressive era Southern populist demagoguery, not populism as we understand it today, but some of it, like literally the populist party in the South. People like Thomas Watson from Georgia, and James Vardaman from Mississippi, Pitchfork Ben Tillman from South Carolina, and Jeff Davis from Arkansas. Jeff Davis, not the Confederate president, but he was a U.S. senator and a governor of Arkansas. But what these guys did was inflame racial tensions, which is exactly what AOC and Bernie Sanders do. And they advocated for regulating industry and for basically socialist politics. And they tried to, you know, lead revolt against against business and to institute all kinds of economic reforms that were burdensome to the economy. They wanted to regulate the railroads, and they combined this sort of socialist economics with racialist politics. And what's ironic is all those types of Southern things, which don't exist anymore, that has much more in common with what AOC and Bernie Sanders are advocating. So they're actually the ones who are ironically trying to push the South back into that era. And they're doing it and saying it's the future and that this is where prosperity goes. And this is where, you know, this is where you need to. Well, the irony is it's the exact opposite. If anything, they're trying to bring the South back to a bad time that we left a long time ago.
Right.
They just don't even know that that's what they're doing.
Well, it's George Wallace who did a lot of this. Because, you know, for whatever reason, there's like historical fiction out there that you want to associate these segregationists with Republicans, but they were Democrats. But they were, if you take away the weird racial stuff, and it's hard to, but if you isolate, start looking at their policies, it was like big labor. It was, it wasn't conservative ideals that they were talking about. It was sort of trying to play class warfare. And, you know, there was a lot of that rhetoric at the time. And then you throw in the racial politics. Obviously, that's what they dined off of. But when they came time to govern, and their policies looked a lot like these sort of socialists we see now.
Yeah, totally true. Totally true. And, you know, what you get from these socialist policies is, you know, you get more poverty, you get worse standards of living, you get less security, all the things that socialism purports to deliver, it in fact does not. We get shortages, we get stagnation, you get excessive political power. I always like to point out to people that if you look at the stats presented in the Black Book of Communism, It says that socialism and communism in the 20th century killed between 94 and 100 million people. Think about that. Between 94 and 100 million people, from not just direct killings and assassinations, but from famine and other things like that. But, you know, if you look at the Holocaust, it killed 6 million people. You would never see college students walking around with Hitler T-shirts, but they'll wear a Shea T-shirt and walk around like that's okay. You know, why is it okay for these young people to be embracing socialism and communism when it literally killed 100 million people? I mean, it's like if people just don't know the facts and the data, the killing camps and all right. The concentration camps and everything else. It's just, I think it's in part just a lack of education. I mean, people don't know what the Soviet Union was like under Stalin, or what the Great Leap Forward was like under Mao, or, you know, Cambodia under Pol Pot, or even what's going on in North Korea.
And those are you know, absolutely applicable examples here. But I think like the brand of socialism that we're being sold is more like a Western European socialism. But the problem is, look at these Western European countries; they don't have the freedoms we have. They don't have speech. They don't have, religion is not protected like it is here in America. We have certain things in our Constitution, our Bill of Rights guarantees, that if you were to try to go down this path of socialism light or whatever, you're going to lose those freedoms. It's just a fact of life to get everybody on a level playing field. This is the endeavor here with these forms of government. It won't work that way because you're going to have to give up a little. And that's what you're seeing in these blue states. And they're having this regulatory regime that's just untenable. You can't live under it. It's not even just like business. It's like what you could put in your front yard or whatever. So people are saying you can't have a plastic bag at the grocery store or you know, whatever. That's why they are fleeing these places, because they like these freedoms that won't be guaranteed. But look, we can figure it out for ourselves. We're perfectly capable human beings. The blue states don't view you that way.
No, they don't. And, you know, one sad thing to watch to me is the United Kingdom, because I like England. I like English history. It is from where we derive our notion of the ancient rights and liberties and the form of consent of the governed, and we get our constitutional history, and even the Declaration emerges out of things like Locke and his treaties of government and the English Bill of Rights and the Petition Rights, all this stuff. But now you look at there and people are getting arrested for praying on the streets, not praying out loud, but literally for standing there, closing their eyes, nodding their head and praying, and they're getting arrested for it. And we're seeing, you know, on social media, it was a big deal maybe a month or two ago, Mississippi's GDP is outperforming the United Kingdom's. Well, that actually shouldn't. It surprised a lot of people in Europe. It surprised a lot of people in the United Kingdom, but it didn't surprise people who actually track economic data and say, look, why wouldn't Mississippi have a higher GDP? It's embracing economic reforms that are proven to work. So, and the UK is doing the opposite. So, it's not like it's rocket science here.
But it's these flaws in these philosophies, the way they view human nature. And this is the problem I've always had. They just assume that people are generally the same, that we're going, right. if you put them in a set of surroundings, they're going to react the same. They're going to do the same. They're not going to stray from the program here. And is it like Billy Graham talks about socialism being a system for saints, and you know that capitalism's for sinners. But because you gotta figure out a way to capture like human behavior and understand it's chaotic. It's of the world. It's a bunch of different things. And if you try to institute like a one size fits all government style anything, you take out that human factor. You can't ever get to where they say they can get, because that is just not how human beings are, unless you want to live in a place like North Korea where the government has to impose their will and tell you this is how you're going to live your life.
Yeah, you're totally right. Anytime people try to standardize or make uniform human behavior, it leads down the road to coercion and tyranny. And it reminds me that the word diversity, the way it's used by the left, refers to sort of immutable characteristics like race and things that people can't choose. And they try to inflame tensions among people based on those surface level characteristics. But there is a historic notion of a related concept that somebody like Russell Kirk referred to as variety. And you talk about the varieties of human experiences. Somebody living on a farm in Alabama is going to have a very different experience than somebody growing up in the middle of Manhattan, who's going to have a very different experience from somebody growing up, I don't know, in Venice or in Shanghai or, you know, wherever. But this is what is actually beautiful about the human experience, is that we do have these differences. And yet at a certain level of generality, when you back up, there are parts of human nature that are universal. There are things that we share. But when it comes to governing people, they're much better at doing it when they're operating at a scale and scope that is local, because it gives people as much agency as possible. It gives them control over their circumstances, and that is an empowering thing. And that's why we have things like limited government and checks and balances and federalism in the United States, is because our founders were really genius when it came to observing human behavior. And it turns out that what they wrote about in both the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, even though they mapped out different sorts of architecture for government, they really tapped into the way human beings operate and behave in a way that is astounding. Now that we've gone, we're at the semi-quincentennial, so we're 250 years removed from a lot of the founding figures. And we're able to actually look at empirical and quantitative work and say, wow, it's pretty impressive that the founders were right about so many things that humans do, and they didn't have the type of quantitative and empirical methods that we have now. And they just, they were right, and they knew it just from observation and theory. They didn't have to run regressions and algorithms and rely on AI to ferret out fundamental truths about human nature.
No, but you know, kind of the human condition is like it's a reliable thing. And what they knew is when you try to impose like the perfect system of government, that it can't work. I mean, it's like you said, right. it leads to the expansion of it. It leads to corruption. So, I think there's some very well-intentioned people who go into government service and want to do right. But the way you it's just kind of a slippery slope. You're never going to achieve it through government. You got to find something else that's your higher power besides the government. That's a problem the society is grappling with right now.
Yeah, and that higher power is typically a religious and spiritual. And what's so disturbing about the left is because it has rejected traditional religions, it actually sacralizes politics. So for many young leftist activists, their politics are their religion. That's why they're so fanatical about transgenderism or, you know, whatever. You name it, whatever it is, they're fanatical about it. And that's why they're willing to destroy people, because for them, they believe in this stuff as if it's their religion.
It's a hill to die on, right. It is their end all be all. Hey, Alan, I cut you short here. We're a little long, but thanks for hopping on this morning. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good, Jeff. This is fun. We'll do it again.
All right. Alan Mendenhall, ladies and gentlemen, you can read him at 1819 News, 1819news.com. He's also with the Heritage Foundation. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like a bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some tell my mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Tomorrow, John Gray will be with us, as well as April Marie Fogel, and a guest to be named later. Johnny writes, well, we don't want to be in anyone's bedroom. We also don't want people in the street telling us about their bedroom activities. Hear, hear. Fire Dog, my grandson is a year and a half old. Maybe in a few years he appreciates baseball a bit more. We'll go on those stadiums that I missed. See a screenshot of a lot of gobbledygook here. And then finally, Michael, socialism worked in Norway because there were a single ethnicity with a common culture and a common moral code. As soon as that balance changes, it begins to fall apart. Coming up here shortly, Midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, just a few minutes away from the show. I do want to start off this way, though. I was inspired with Parker this morning. So my day started off this way, Jeff. Air was a little less sticky than normal out in West Mobile County. My corn was growing so fast you could hear it, and sunflowers and soybeans too. Nearby, my neighbors, who are once again slated to lose money farming peanuts, their peanuts were up probably 8 or 9 inches here after the rain. And they were sitting there standing by waiting to go to the market this year and let them lose money again on peanuts and cotton. And that's how it looks here in West Mobile County.
Well, that's good.
This is my Parker. What do you think?
Well, he likes to give us a lot more time on the weather, though. That sucks.
Politically, no, but talking about the weather.
The corn is growing, and
that's the people I come from, man. That's what I come from. Like, it would be the conversation growing up, my grandfather and them. It just first, you know, they'd talk how much the corn, they'd be up at the co-op or whatever. They'd talk how much the corn grew in the last week. I'd sit there as a kid. That was conversations I was involved in and what cows were bringing.
Well, he calls it the North Country for us down here.
Yes, there it is, the Great White North of Huntsville and the Greater Metroplex.
It was like going to Ottawa or something, right?
Like pack your parka when you go. Coming up on today's show, Cameron Smith's going to join me here shortly. Also, you know her, you love her, Erica Thomas, all in the first hour. Second hour, this could be an interesting conversation. Dr. Michaels is going to join us, talk about ticks in Alabama. You know, this is Lyme disease and all that stuff. It got attention. Now this alpha-gal disease, you've heard this, right, Jeff, where you can't eat meat if you get it from a tick bite. It makes you sick.
Well, no. Yeah, that sounds awful. Alpha,
yeah, it's... And it's borne by the Lone Star tick, which I didn't think existed down here until my buddy sent me a picture the other day. He'd been working outside and had one on him. So we're going to talk tick questions. We'll do that in hour number two of the show. So that's coming
up.
Don't
give these militant vegans any ideas here.
Yeah, well, maybe that's one of the theories that it was put out there to make people like me unable to eat red meat.
Well, that would assess the end of that's the collapse of society. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, forgot to say goodbye. This has been The Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.